This is a true story about machines. A large conglomerate had identified a reservoir of hydrocarbon fuel, but in order to put it to use, it had to be extracted and refined. The fuel itself consisted primarily of modified hydrocarbons and also of polymers. A polymer is a large molecule composed of repeating subunits and often serves some structural purpose. The conglomerate made machines to perform the refining, concentrating the hydrocarbons. This task was made more complicated by competition from other conglomerates that had identified the same hydrocarbon fuel source and had begun to manufacture their own machines to extract, concentrate, and refine the fuel. In a stroke of what seems, in retrospect, genius, the initial conglomerate modified its refining process to cause the polymers in the fuel to fuse to each other and to turn the fuel into a thick gel that was largely impervious to the machines of the competitors. This strategy proved so successful that we continue to benefit from it to this day. The machines are now collectively known as rennet, the hydrocarbon fuel source as milk, and the coagulated and fused polymers of casein are the first steps that transform the milk into cheese. The conglomerate in the story is the first human to make cheese. Rennet derives from the stomach of mammals, and while we think of rennet as primarily coming from calves' stomachs, the earliest domesticated milk producers were probably sheep, and this first human making cheese may have come from northern Poland. Our earliest archaeological evidence of cheese production comes from Kujawia in northern Poland, dated to about 5500 BCE, and from the Dalmatian coast of Croatia in about 5200 BCE, but probably dates back an additional 2,000 or 3,000 years. I tell this story this way not because I wish to use machines as a metaphor for enzymes, but because enzymes actually are machines. Like all machines, enzymes in rennet are composed of molecules and perform their task by moving and pivoting and making electromagnetic connections with a raw material in order to physically transform it. Milk is composed of, amongst other things, a phosphoprotein called casein that surrounds globules of fat and keeps these micelles in suspension. The most important enzyme, that is to say machine, in rennet is a protein called chymosin, or renin, that cuts or cleaves the casein in a manner to foster fusion between casein molecules, creating a protein-fat amalgam and separating this from the watery components we know as whey. When we consume the cheese, that is the final product that begins with forming the curd, other machines within us disassemble the machines that we eat into pieces that we use to build machines of our own. I'm Josh Young, and this is Playing Odd, a podcast about complexity and information in the natural world. Episode 9, Agents of Change. We ended episode 8 with the extraordinary claim that there are no genes for complexity or for intelligence or language or height. There are only genes for proteins. When we talk about genes for traits, there's a great deal of hand-waving that goes on between the description of the gene and the manifestation of the trait. How do we get from a protein to the facility for language? Occasionally, there is a fairly direct connection, as is the case with sickle cell, in which a single base pair substitution in a gene leads to a protein that polymerizes into a long chain that can distort the blood cell itself. In these single gene traits, it is often possible to draw a direct connection between the abnormal protein and the trait or pathology it causes. To use scientific terminology, the genes associated with a trait are called the genotype, and the manifestation of the trait in physical form is called the phenotype. When Gregor Mendel performed his seminal work on pea plants, he discovered single gene traits that led directly to particular phenotypes. Although such associations between genetic variations or mutations and their physical manifestations do exist, they represent only a small minority, and some traits that appear monogenetic are instead the result of gene linkage rather than arising from a single gene. The great majority of traits are polygenetic, and some involve environmental influences as well. Polygenetic traits are much harder to trace through lineages than monogenetic traits. This is both because multiple genes are involved, making probability more difficult to calculate, but also because there is often no clear connection between the combination of genes and the trait or pathology they produce. A case in point is inflammatory bowel disease, which, although having a strong genetic component, is not attributable to any single gene. I'd like to reframe the problem of polygenetic traits in terms of machines, as we did above in our story of cheese. Each gene encodes for a protein, a chain of amino acids connected in a particular sequence governed by the genetic code. This string of amino acids is not itself a functioning machine, but becomes one by folding in on itself. In doing so, the protein exposes some regions that may fit lock and key with other molecules that are its targets, or may rotate or spin to allow passage of ions through a membrane. The problem of identifying the amino acid sequence, which is governed by the genome, is simple compared to the problem of determining how this chain of amino acids, often hundreds or thousands of amino acids long, will fold into its final conformation. Not only is the folding a function of the orientation of atoms within the amino acids, but also a function of the dielectrics or relative charges of some of the amino acids that can act as an attractive or repulsive fashion, as do magnets. This is further complicated by the fact that the orientation is influenced by temperature and by pH level. The determination of protein folding, even with the aid of computers, is enormously difficult. Cyrus Leventhal, in 1969, noted that a typical protein can have as many as 10 to the 300th power possible folding configurations. That is the number 1 followed by 300 zeros. And yet these proteins, when synthesized, seem to fold into their appropriate shape in fractions of a second. In 1994, the Critical Assessment of Protein Structure Prediction, CASP, was launched, in which researchers would compete to predict protein folding, with winners announced biennially. That competition was effectively won in 2020 by Google's AlphaFold, one of the most important contributions of artificial intelligence to global health. Some proteins are structural and polymeric, like collagen and casein, and some proteins perform functions like the enzymes of rennet. Let's think about these functions in broader terms. The function performed by renin, the cleaving of casein, can be thought of as a simple program. When attached to casein, change the configuration in a way that cleaves the molecule at a particular spot. We could express this function in programming language with not too many lines of code. When rennet is added to milk at the correct temperature, it is, of course, not a single molecule of rennet that is infused, but a huge number. Each molecule of rennet is running its same little program, all of them simultaneously. In biological systems, such as those involved in digestion, other enzymes are present running their own simple programs. This is a sort of computation with which we rarely have to deal. A lot of small programs running at the same time, as embodied by different physical machines. In complexity science, these little independent programs are called agents, and we would refer to this as a multi-agent system. The product that emerges is the result not only of the programming of each individual agent, but of the interaction between agents. Let's reflect back on our discussion of self-assembly in the example of the sandpile model. We saw that a consistent structure arose through the interaction of multiple grains of sand, all of which were the same. We can think of each of these grains as an agent, but a pretty boring one. On the other hand, the agents of biological systems, enzymes and other proteins, are anything but boring, each of which does its own little computation. But in the same way that the pattern of the sand pile, or the attractor of the double pendulum experiment, or the persistence of aperiodicity of Stephen Wolfram's cellular automata were impossible to predict by examination of their elements individually, the outcome of interactions of the multiple agents that are proteins are often opaque until they manifest as a trait or as a pathology. In each episode, I have described this podcast as an exploration of complexity and information in the natural world, and it took us until episode 4 to define information. It has taken us until this moment for us to define complexity. In the field of complexity science, the discipline this podcast attempts to describe, a complex system is one composed of multiple components that are generally heterogeneous, that is to say, they're different from each other. Complex systems are not merely a collection of parts, as a bag of nuts and bolts might be, but are composed of parts that interact with each other, demonstrating interconnectedness and also interdependency. We can see this in biology in the interplay between proteins and other biochemicals, each of which is an agent in the complex system. The collective action of the agents is often nonlinear and unpredictable, in the way that traits and pathologies can generally not be predicted simply by examining the functions of the individual proteins involved. An oversimplification, but a useful example of a system that's almost complex, is the game of chess. In chess, different pieces have different properties, which is to say, they're capable of executing different programs. In the case of the pawn, the predominant program is to move forward one square, although other programs, of course, exist for the pawn. As the game progresses, the strength of each player's position changes until the match is finally over and one player has won. But there is nothing in the advantages and disadvantages each player obtains that is directly the result of the program that each piece is running. Put another way, the winner of a chess match would never ascribe his victory to his third pawn from the right or from the strategy employed by his left bishop. The game is certainly dependent upon the programs run by each of the pieces, but it is the interdependency and interactions between these pieces that form the narrative that we recognize as the game. A protein is very much like a chess piece. It is an agent in a complex system, but it is often no easier to draw a connection between that protein and a particular trait than it is to draw a connection between the king's rook and the game's victory. Truly complex systems do not consist of turns in which only one agent moves. In real complex systems, everything is happening all at once. Complex systems can behave in unpredictable and dramatic ways, but they also demonstrate a degree of robustness. A classic example is the stock market. The stocks themselves are, of course, not agents in this game. They're more akin to the fat globules in our cheese production and are the substrate on which the agents act. The agents are, in this case, individual, institutional, and computer stock traders who execute their programs of buying or selling. Like biological systems, the stock market is subject to environmental influences, which we generally think of as news. Perhaps word of a semiconductor shortage, or an oil crisis, or a distant hurricane changed the milieu in which the market operates, and the market adapts to these stresses. But it is robust in the sense that it is never the case that all the shares of all the companies have been purchased and the market ceases to exist. The market changes in character, but it is ultimately robust to the challenges it faces. We talk about bull markets as the price of stocks rise over a period of time, or bear markets in which stock prices fall. The transition from bull to bear market is difficult to predict. One might even argue that it is not in any meaningful way predictable. These surprising and occasionally large-scale changes are one of the defining features of a complex system. The bull market acts differently from the bear market. It is almost as if they are different forms of the same complex system. Indeed, the analogy generally used in complex systems is that of phase transition, as if the complex system were going from a liquid state to a gaseous state, and, like phase transitions in matter, the moment of the transition can occur quite rapidly. I have, in a few of these episodes, described a system as being greater than the sum of its parts, and I want to define more precisely what I mean by this. Complex systems demonstrate properties that are present in none of their elements. One example that is easy to recognize, although the system is not truly complex, is the characteristic of water to be wet. I'm not going to describe what wetness is, since any human being can recognize it, but I will ask, how many molecules of water does it take to be wet? Certainly, one molecule of water is not wet. Wetness is a property that occurs only with a large collection and interaction of water molecules. Wetness is a property of the collective that is not present in the individual subunits. In the case of living matter, reproduction is emergent. There is no enzyme that reproduces. Reproduction, metabolism, each of our senses is emergent. There is no substance, no agent, no protein that itself sees or hears or tastes. These are properties that exist only in the whole and not in any of the parts. Emergent properties arise without direction, in the same way that our sand pile arose without direction. Our multigenetic traits are themselves emergent, which is why it is so difficult to connect the dots between the genes and the trait. Understanding complexity is about the primacy of understanding process over product. We need the chess pieces to play chess, but it is not important of what material the pieces are made, only their role as agents in the system. But where does this leave us? If we cannot a priori ascertain the emergent properties of a system, does this leave us no tools to describe it? Is emergence going to be our deus ex machina? Are we simply going to say that the brain is emergent and wash our hands of the rest of the matter? Of course not. Because as robust and as flexible, as surprising and unpredictable as complex systems are, and the emergent structures they produce, they do not by themselves infuse additional information, only additional outcomes from information that already exists. Our inward journey has taken us very far, but perhaps it's time for us to take a walk outside. In this week's program, we learned to see ourselves as collections of machines running simple programs, and we call these machines agents. We discovered that interdependent agents may collectively give rise to properties that are distinct from any of the properties of the individual agents, and we called this emergence. Finally, and at long last, we defined complexity as a system composed of heterogeneous, interacting, and interdependent agents that collectively behave in nonlinear fashions and can produce large and unexpected changes in behavior, and we call these changes phase transitions. Finally, we recognize that complex systems can ingest environmental stimuli and stresses, but that the complex system itself is not a source of information. I want to thank you, kind listener, for taking this journey through complexity with me. A bibliography for this episode, with links to additional material, can be found at playingodd.com. I hope this program will serve as an opening to a broader conversation. Please write to me with your questions or comments at josh@playingodd.com. Looking forward to spending time with you next week. I'm Josh Young.